Good morning. It is 8:57 a.m. We are here today, September 29th, 2025, in the OPA Hearing Room, Suite 907 of the DNA Building in Hagatna, Guam, for the formal hearing of OPA PA 25-007, ASC Trust LLC versus the Government of Guam Retirement Fund. Presiding over the hearing today is Public Auditor Benjamin J. Cruz. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Jared Hernandez and Marian Magotia. Will appellant ASC please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, Mr. Public Auditor. William Brennan from the Areola Law Firm on behalf of AFC Trust LLC. We won't have an institutional representative present today as none were listed as witnesses. Thank you.
Thank you. Will purchasing agency GGRF please identify themselves and any institutional representative present for the record?
Good morning, Public Auditor. With me to I am Vincent Camacho on behalf of the Government of Guam Retirement Fund. And with me today as the institutional representative is the Executive Director, Ms. Paula Boss. No further individuals will be attending today as well.
Thank you, may proceed.
Good morning, Council. I thank you all for your patience in my decision on the motion to dismiss. I realize that that's still outstanding. I listened to the motion hearing twice last week and once yesterday morning. Mr. Brennan knows and has represented both sides of decisions in this, where I have issued some of my zaniest decisions as it relates to jurisdiction, because the Supreme Court did not give us guidance, much guidance in DFS. As a result, I believe I have a case, we have a case before the Supreme Court, or I mean at the Supreme Court, awaiting decision. If they've all been heard, one where it was dismissed because the person knew before the hearing that the other party was not qualified to pick up a bid because it had a C minus during that year. And but won the bid. One where they knew on the day that the procurement, I mean the IFB was issued. And in 3 years, we've been waiting for a decision from the Supreme Court giving errors and more guidance. In the meantime, I have received a remand and a couple of decisions from the Superior Court judges, where they're insistent that I must find an aggrieved party. In this case, the RFP went out on the 17th of March. On the 31st of March, ASC submitted a question to Retirement Fund asking for a clarification on whether or not they were planning on complying with 5108 and how they were going to do that. Retirement Fund released released its response on the 10th of April. And ASC, within 6 days, not 6 months like in DFS, filed protests on 16th. Had retirement fund answered the question on the 1st or 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, even on the 7th of April. And ASC showed the alacrity with which they filed their protest. It would have been within 14 days of the 31st of March that ASC was willing to, I mean, retirement fund was willing to accept as an alternate date for this hearing officer is going to find that that was within the time, and we will be claiming jurisdiction over this case. So we'll proceed with this hearing. Is that clear?
Okay. Yes, thank you.
Go ahead and call the case.
Do we want opening?
Do you wish to make opening statements?
I would, if possible.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Public Auditor, and good morning. I appreciate the clarity on the jurisdictional issue, as I think that's why, that is part of the reason why ASC has requested a hearing in this matter. It's because of clarity. We want to be very clear on what our position is, but we also want clarity on what the retirement fund's position is. And I think if you have, I'm sure you have had reviewed all the papers in this matter, what becomes unclear is the retirement fund's position on 5008. In the first instance, in the denial of ASC's protests at the agency level, the retirement fund took a bright-line position that the local procurement preference does not apply to RFPs. In fact, they said it is inconsistent with 5.16 and 3114 of the regulations. When this matter came on appeal in their agency statement, the retirement fund then changed, albeit it was a small detail, but we think it is consequential. The retirement fund then said, even if it is to be applied, it cannot be applied until we are in negotiations of a contract and not before that point. And then if you look to the papers following the retirement fund's motion to dismiss, the reply concerning the motion to dismiss, and most recently their August 19th hearing brief, the retirement fund's position is now threefold. One, it shouldn't apply. Two, if it does apply, as we said in response to this appeal, it will apply at some point after we have ranked the qualified offerers. And three, if it does apply, we will only apply it on a price basis, which means some point after we begin contract negotiations with the highest ranked offeror. If there is someone who qualifies for local preference, we will determine whether that preference is appropriate based only on price at the end of the RFP process. We anticipate this will be brought up whichever way you decide, Mr. Public Auditor, and we want a clear record what the retirement fund's position is, because in our view, if the retirement fund truly believes 5008 applies, this body should order them to reform the RFP to make clear how that process will look. If the retirement fund takes the position that it will only occur during price negotiations, I intend to examine Ms. Bloss during this proceeding as to what that will look like, because nothing in the RFP makes clear how that will happen. So with that, we look forward to the evidence presentation we're going to give today. We hope that at the end of the hearing, you will agree with us that there is no clarity here. This matter should be remanded to the retirement fund. They should be ordered to amend the RFP to conform with Guam law and the local procurement policy preference. Thank you.
Mr. Clancho.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Public Auditor. We begin today with an important reminder, and I indulge your indulgence in at least for us to create the record with regard to the jurisdictional issue. I will just address that for at least for now, for the record, Your Honor.
Please.
The RFP was issued on March 17th. The key facts in this case are not in dispute. ASC filed a pre-award protest on April 16th. which DGRF denied on April 23rd. AFC appealed on April 30th. Since then, no proposals have been opened and no award has been named. This appeal is therefore a pure question of law. How Guam procurement statutes apply to these settled facts? With regard to the GGRF's first position with regard to jurisdiction of the public auditor, under 5 GCA 5425A, a protest must be filed within 14 days of when the protester knew or should have known of the basis of the protest. The RFP itself, from the day of issuance on March 17, disclosed that it was a qualifications-based professional services procurement under 5 GCA 5216 and 2 GAR 3114, and it did not include any numerical local preference scoring. The later March 31st question and April 11th answer simply confirmed what the RFP already said. Confirmation does not reset statutory clock, because the 14-day period began as early as March 17 or as late as March 31st, ASC's April 16 protest was untimely and the office public auditor lacks jurisdiction. With regard to Section 5008, Section 5008 was fully satisfied and confirmed by key precedents. ASC claims GGRF violated 5 GCA 5008 by omitting a point scoring local preference. But 5008 in nowhere contains any such mandate for professional service procurement. Its goal is to ensure that when qualified local firms exist, award is ultimately made to a Guam licensed business. GGRF's RFP fulfills that goal by requiring the successful offeror to obtain a Guam license and establish a staff Guam-based office before contract execution. ASC leans on Radiocom, but as the case involved a sole source award where no competition occurred and the agency never looked for local vendors, the OPA set aside the procurement for shutting out local businesses. By contrast, GGRF solicited full and open competition and embedded a local presence requirement. Radiocom therefore actually supports GGRF. It teaches that local preference is satisfied when the local vendors can compete on local on equal terms and the winner must be locally licensed. ASC also cites Emission Technologies, but that case likewise reinforces GGRF's compliance. There, the RFP required a Guam business license at the proposal submission, yet the agency negotiated with a vendor that never had a license. The OPA ruled that consideration of an award of an unlicensed vendor violated both the solicitation and 5008. GGRF's RFP is different. It expressly requires licensing in a staff office for award, and no proposal has ever been opened. Emission Technologies shows that 5008 forbids, and GGRF has avoided exactly that problem. In fact, ASC's own hearing briefing acknowledges that section 5008 applies to all procurements, even if the RFP is not expressly cited. It nowhere claims that a missing statutory citation is a defect. This admission undercuts any suggestion that GGRF had to reference 5008 by name. This procurement has been transparent, prejudice-free. Director Paula Bloss will attest that all questions were answered in writing and distributed simultaneously to every potential offer, and that GGRF removed a transition planning requirement, ASC question, and that GGRF honored the automatic stay once the appeal was filed. Because no proposals have been opened and no award has been made, ASC has suffered no prejudice. Basically, ASC's position is that because they're the only local bidder, supposedly, they want to be handed the contract on a silver platter. That's not the case, and that doesn't work for the Government of Guam Retirement Fund. So for these reasons, untimeliness, full compliance with 5008, confirmation from Radiocom and Emission Technologies, and ASC's own concession that no explicit statutory citation is required, GGRF respectfully asks the public auditor to grant the pending motion to dismiss. Should jurisdiction nonetheless be assumed, this appeal should be denied on the merits. Thank you, public auditor, for the time.
Thank you both. If you had taken the time, Mr. Camacho, to listen to the motion to dismiss, the Office of Public Accountability took probably unreasonable interest in this case, asking more questions of the parties in the than were necessary. This whole issue of local, whether it's a absolute preference, and if not, what exactly does mean local? If it was not ASC Trust, and say it was Robert James, would Robert James be considered local? It has a fully functioning office. But it's part of a national franchise. I'm sure you'll present that the current contractor has a local office and local staff, but mail stuff from South Dakota. This is a very interesting question, because we have 28 contract RFPs that we send out to the office, and we need to know whether or not there is this absolute preference. And whether or not EY can and should be considered a local office. EY has a large office operation here. But after last weekend, when President Trump announced that there was this $100,000 visa application for H2B. I've since come to know that its office is operating with a staff of 20 H2B workers, and with applications for 8 more in the works. Would that qualify as a local office? Because obviously, 95% of its staff is not from Guam or naturalized, or have a work permit from Guam. So this is of interest to the community. So I was hoping you guys could work it out. But I guess we're going to take it to the court and let them do it. So, thank you, because I need an answer. Because I know that they've used Empower for over 30 years, because you've had it before. So I'll let you guys put on the evidence and what exactly local means. And I'm hoping that clarifies it. And maybe you guys will, maybe at the end of the hearing, I'll order you to do a brief on what you, is, what should and could be local, and whether or not it's absolute, and what exactly that means. Because this is a very interesting question. So thank you. Let's proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Public Auditor. ASC Trust will call Ms. Bloss as our first witness.
Please stand and raise your right hand. Please state your name. Olive Bloss. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Thank you, Mr. Public Auditor. Good morning, Ms. Bloss.
Good morning.
Is it okay if I call you Ms. Bloss?
Yes.
So we've not met in person before. We may have spoken on the phone in a different life when I worked elsewhere. But my name is Bucky Brennan. I represent ASC, and I'll be asking you some questions today. Let me just preface by saying, if you can't hear me or if anything's unclear, please feel free to ask me to repeat myself or just tell me it's not clear. May I ask, have you ever testified in a formal hearing setting before?
I have.
Okay, perfect. So I won't go over any of the ground rules, but today I would like to start with some background. And I just want to appreciate the public auditor's comments that I'm sorry that you and the retirement fund have to be the guinea pig for this issue, but I agree that it's important, and I hope you can see that as well.
Yes.
Thank you. So your position at the retirement fund, can you just give me the exact title?
I am the director of the Government of Guam Retirement Fund.
Thank you, ma'am. And as the director, are you appointed by the Board of Trustees for the Government of Guam Retirement Fund?
I am.
And so am I correct to understand that that means the Government of Guam Retirement Fund is an autonomous agency of the government?
It's quasi-autonomous.
Sure. So let me ask, I'm sure there are other consequences to that. For the procurement law, as you understand it, is it an autonomous agency?
We do have procurement authority.
Excellent. And is that procurement authority by virtue of you being an autonomous agency, or are you delegated authority from the chief procurement officer, or both, if you know?
It's actually authorized by statute, and the chief procurement officer also went ahead and gave us authority as well. So it satisfies both.
Excellent. And are you, as you understand it, the head of the purchasing agency for the purposes of the procurement law?
The director's position is that.
And so you're familiar with head of the purchasing agency phrase under Title V, Chapter 5?
Pretty much.
Excellent. How long have you been the director of the retirement fund?
For about 21 years.
Okay, so I'm going to assume by that length of time, you have a good amount of experience with Guam's procurement law.
Yes.
Okay, especially if you're conducting your own procurements at the retirement fund. So I'm going to assume when I ask you questions, you know the difference between an IFB and an RFP.
That's correct.
And you know what those acronyms mean.
Invitation for bid.
Correct. I just want to make sure I don't have to go back. So I really appreciate that you have that experience. I want to talk just a little bit more background so I can contextualize this case. Isn't it true that ASC and the retirement fund have been in litigation for related procurement before this case?
Have they ever filed for protests before? Is that what you mean by litigation?
Yes. So we've come to the OPA before, ASC versus the retirement fund.
Yes.
And I'll just represent that was in 2023.
I don't recall the exact year.
Excellent. I'm not going to hold you to it, but I'm looking at the case numbers. It appears they're 2023. So if that's about the ballpark, can you just confirm?
I will go ahead and refer to that.
So let me just ask, did that procurement and the subsequent litigation here at the OPA, that preceded how the retirement fund acted in this 2025 procurement, correct?
Actually, the if you're talking about how the procurement, the proposal was actually put together for this particular procurement, our RFP really has not changed, you know, over a period of maybe 10, 15 years. The only thing that we really update in there is just to kind of get things that are something that we should actually include, like cybersecurity, things that are a little bit more modernized for today's search.
Excellent. And so in using that form, I guess that's really the gist of my question. That 2023 procurement that was litigated is virtually the same RFP that's being litigated today in 2025.
I think so.
Yeah, updates, you know, for regulation or other, you know, advances in technology notwithstanding. May I ask you, ma'am, and I am just going to ask you just for purposes of the record. In 2023, without telling me anything about what was communicated, can I just confirm you were represented by Attorney Camacho, the Camacho Calvo firm, and perhaps Carl Smith Ball?
Yes.
For that 2023 RFP.
Yes.
Subsequent to that, I understand that Mr. Camacho in particular held a designation as a special assistant attorney general. Do you recall that?
For this procurement.
For the 2025?
Yes.
Okay. But isn't it true that the Office of the Attorney General also assigned assistant attorney generals Marina Julian and Fred Nishihira at some point to help with the 2025 RFP?
Yes.
Okay, and without getting into anything that was stated, I've seen in the procurement record there were actually meetings and drafts back and forth with their office, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. To your knowledge, has Marina Julian ever worked on a Government of Guam Retirement Fund procurement?
This was my first time to work with her and Fred.
And it's fair to say the Government of Guam Retirement Fund procurement in general, this RFP is not something simple. Is that a fair statement?
Okay.
I'll just say, in fact, use a consultant to help you develop specifications, an off-island consultant that specializes in things like ERISA, right?
ERISA, the consultant also helped us with being able to make sure that we were updated in any type of services that needed to be added on to the RFP.
And again, because you've never worked with her before, let's just confirm, you're not aware whether Marina Julian has ever worked on any type of those issues, federal compliance, ERISA?
No, I don't know.
Thank you. So you heard your counsel's opening statement that a lot of the facts in this case are not really in dispute. I think that's accurate. So I'm not going to ask you about details of the RFP. I actually want to ask you more specifically, do you review any of the papers that are filed with the OPA before or after they're filed by your counsel?
Before.
Okay. And without getting into any of the actual conversations, for example, do you have any sort of approval, or is it just sort of you work with counsel collaboratively?
Both.
Okay. So if I were to ask you questions about those documents, you'd be familiar with them?
I don't memorize all the documents, but pretty much.
And understood, neither do I. I won't hold you to that standard. But if I were to ask you, for example, about an argument or an assertion from those documents, I just want to make sure you know what I'm talking about. You've seen them before.
Yes, I have seen them before.
Excellent. May I go to ASC's Exhibit 2, please? And there's a binder in front of you, ma'am, that should be ASC Trust exhibits. And they should be numbered. So Exhibit 1 should be the RFP. So if you see the RFP pages, it'll be after that. And then are we able to pull it up on screen? So are you looking at a document that has April 23, 2025 on retirement fund letterhead?
Yes.
Okay, I'd ask you just first to go to the end of that document, and we should see a signature page.
Okay.
Is that your signature, ma'am?
Yes.
Okay, and so can I confirm that you, and obviously I don't want to hear anything about you what you discussed with counsel, but you signed and delivered this in response to ASC's protest. I would call it the first protest in that matter. Is that fair?
That's fine.
Okay, and so I'm actually going to ask you to turn to page 1. I'm making sure the screen has it at page 1 too, because it's up behind you. And in the bottom half of the page, I'm going to read from a paragraph where it says that. Sorry, could you just go down there? I'm going to use yours so I don't have to go pull my binder. But essentially, there is language to the effect, and tell me when you find it, after the subparagraph number one heading, that the retirement fund rejects the protest contention that WAM law mandates a preference in qualification-based selection process for professional services. Do you see that language? It's at the end of the first paragraph, after number one.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so that was the position the retirement fund took on April 23rd, 2025, correct?
That's right.
And are you familiar with what it says about the local preference? The statute mandates a preference. I'm going to call that the local preference.
You're referring to 5008?
Yes, 5008. In fact, there's a citation there, 5008 subparagraph D. I'm going to call that the local preference, if that's okay.
Okay.
So as we talk about it. So as of April 23rd, the retirement fund's position was this doesn't apply, right? 5008D does not apply to an RFP.
I don't think it says that it doesn't apply.
Okay.
I think what we're actually saying here is that the RFP that we issued is qualifications based, but there's nothing in 5008 that requires us to use a point score during the evaluation period, but we do follow 5008 before we award whoever the selected qualified bidder is. Then, you know, once we've negotiated price, we will implement 5008.
But to be clear, that's not what this says here. I understand that that's your testimony today, but I'm going to read the sentence specifically. While GGRF acknowledges and supports the policy favoring local businesses, we respectfully reject the protest contention that the statute mandates a preference in the qualifications-based selection process for professional services. So I just want to be very clear. This says nothing about rejection of a points-based system, right?
Okay.
This says nothing about you guys applying 5008D at some point before award, correct?
I believe further down.
Okay, I'll ask you to find it. Yeah.
Okay, it doesn't explicitly say that.
Thank you. So as of April 23rd, 2025, the retirement fund's position was, and I'm just, again, to make a record, I'll come to the later correspondence, but we respectfully reject the protest contention that the statute requires or mandates a preference in the qualification-based selection process for professional services. That's all it said as of the 23rd regarding that, correct?
Correct.
So again, and I'm going to point to some other language on page one, but the last paragraph, again, and it's in the procurement record, so I'm just going to read it to you. Reading 5008D to require awarding a contract to a lower-ranked local firm based solely on price would directly conflict with the structured process mandated under Section 526. You see that first sentence of the last paragraph?
Mm-hmm.
So is it the retirement fund's position, again, you signed this letter, that the local preference only applies to price?
No, 5008 with regards to professional services actually includes that the firm that is awarded has a Guam business license and maintains an office, staff office on Guam.
That's your understanding of 5008. Then in addition to price, it's that the firm for professional services has a Guam business license and has a staff in Guam office.
It's not, I mean, with a professional service RFP, we don't look at price yet during the qualifications, I mean, during the evaluation process.
I understand that. So again, my question is just very simply though, looking at that sentence, reading 5008D
mm-hmm.
to require awarding a contract to a lower ranked local firm based solely on price would directly conflict with the, so what you're saying is, for professional services, we don't just look at price. That's just That's the position the retirement fund took?
For this particular, I think what we were saying here is that we would not actually, it would conflict. If we used 5008 and used price as a method of ranking these offers, then it would conflict with the process under solicitation for professional services.
I understand. So, and in fact, that's what your next sentence clarifies, right? It gives an example. And I'll just, if you want to look at the exhibit, right? It gives the example, if there's three firms that are ranked higher than a firm that's local, essentially, you know, that would upend the process under 5216.
Not local, not necessarily local would upend the process. You're saying out of the three firms, we would actually evaluate them just based on their qualifications first. So the local preference would not be something that I would actually use as an evaluation tool.
Perfect. That's exactly what I'm getting at. So as of April 23, the local preference is not impacted prior or during evaluations. But is that fair?
That's right.
Okay, and that is the retirement fund's position.
That's correct.
Can we go to Exhibit 3, please? And then I'm going to ask to turn to page. Well, let me just ask first. Do you recognize Exhibit 3? Yeah. Have you seen this before?
Yes.
So I'll just represent it's the comments to, the rebuttal to ASC's comments in response to the retirement fund statement. So I'm going to ask to go to page 7. Thanks, Jared. Sorry. Let's just give me a moment. Can we go down a little? There we go. So at the beginning of the last paragraph on page 7, ma'am, I'm going to again read to you an argument put forward by your counsel. Although DGRF solicitation did not include a local preference factor under section 5008, this provision is discretionary and not mandatory in the context of professional services procurements, where selection is based on technical competence and experience, not solely on pricing. So again, I want to go back and just make sure I understand your testimony. Your testimony in response to my questioning was, apart from price, the local preference also requires or could require separately a local business license and staffing on Guam, right?
That's right.
But here, in papers put forward, making arguments before the public auditor, let's just take, we'll go out of order, but we'll take the last part. Isn't this assuming that local preference is only on price? Isn't that what is being argued here by the retirement fund?
I think we are actually stating that we hold the qualifications at a higher standard than price. So that's why price is not included in any of the evaluation factors.
But this sentence doesn't say anything about a local office, locally staffed office, and a local business license, correct?
This particular paragraph doesn't.
In fact, this says something very different, in my opinion, and I'm going to ask you to confirm it just so I understand, and I want to be very clear. This says that the local preference for professional service is discretionary on the part of the retirement fund.
During the evaluation stage, I believe that we did not include any local preference. I know this says that it's discretionary and not mandatory, but we do include the 5008 pre-award because it wasn't clear that it had to be part of the evaluation stage for professional services.
And we will come back to that. And I promised to show you 5008 too, so I don't want to, you know, make it seem like I'm blindsiding. But again, I just want to make sure it's very clear for the record. So the retirement fund's position is it's discretionary to apply the local preference before award. That is that how I understand what you said?
Yes. Okay. I know that's what this says, but we consistently apply it that way. Even though it says discretionary here, for all professional services contract, we don't include any type of point scoring during the evaluation stage.
And again, it will always, so what you're saying is it will always be at the retirement fund's discretion at some part after evaluation that you apply the local preference.
It will not be our discretion after evaluation.
It's mandatory at that point?
Yes, we will implement the 5008 pre-award.
So why did the retirement fund, I mean, we could go back to Exhibit 2. Why did the retirement fund respond to ASC that there wouldn't be any consideration for geographical preference?
Because it isn't something that we would consider during the evaluation. What we basically are asking for is that we include it during the points, you know, as a point scoring factor under the evaluation factors. And we won't include it there because it's open. We actually issue our RFP competitively, so it's open to all qualified vendors, even including one business license vendors.
Okay. I promise we will come back to that because I do want to hear about how that process works, right, after evaluation. But I do want to turn to let's go to page 8 if we could, Jared. Just go down. And so I just want to point to subheader E right there. Sorry, if we could just go just a little bit so she can see. I just want to make sure. So, you know, again, I don't want to make it seem like I'm withholding parts of this. This is what you mean. And I think the header appropriately summarizes your argument. Local preference may be applied only after offers are ranked in a qualifications-based procurement.
That's right.
And I'll just represent to you. So if a local firm, or what you are saying there is, again, and I just need to make sure I understand, and I'll show you 5008D if you need it, but price is only one part of local preference. For professional services, and sorry, I see you nodding, but just if you could.
Price is something that's considered under local preference.
Okay. But an alternative consideration is locally staffed office and a local business license.
I don't believe that's discretionary. I think that is something that is stated in 5008, that you have to have a Guam business license and maintain a local office, local office.
Yeah, I mean, let's just be clear, right? Over 20 years of experience with government procurement, you know the difference between a responsible and non-responsible bidder or offer, correct? That's the legal capacity to do the work sought in the government solicitation.
Responsible. Mm-hmm.
Right? Responsible means you have the legal capacity to do the work.
Yes.
Responsibility requires a business license in Guam separate and apart from 5008D, right?
Yes.
So the local preference is not the requirement of a business license in Guam at the time of award. Let's make that very clear, right?
We do require it.
Because in order to be a responsible bidder or offer under our procurement law, you must have the legal capacity.
Yes.
Including a business to do any business, a license to do any business in Guam. I just want to make sure that's clear, that that's not just a 5008 thing. Can we go to Exhibit 4? It's the reply regarding the motion to dismiss. At page 3. Sure. And if we can go down, page three. There we go. So, sorry, Jared, if you could just go down a little bit further. It might not be page three. I might have just got the header. There we go. Stop right there. Yeah. You know, it's okay. I can just ask you the question generally. I'm trying to understand the retirement fund's position, and if I could just summarize so you can confirm before I move on to my next category of questions. The retirement fund's position is it is mandatory to apply local preference after the evaluation of proposals.
That's correct.
And at that point, that all that local preference requires after evaluation of proposals is for the retirement fund to award a contract to a firm for professional services that has an office in Guam, a staffed office in Guam, and a business license.
That's right. The successful, whoever the successful offer is, right?
And I guess I want to ask you about, I mean, does it say that in your RFP?
Yes.
I don't want to ask it in the negative. I don't, you know, it's hard for me to just say go look for it in the RFP, but
yeah,
if I were to give you the RFP generally, would you know where that would appear? Like what, because the RFP obviously follows your sequence, right? Proposal, evaluation, ranking, negotiations, award. Is that a fair summary?
Okay.
So does it say in the RFP that you are applying the local preference, you require a locally staffed office and a Guam business license?
Yes. I believe under, if I could look at the RFP, I think it's section 5, minimum requirements.
Understood. And I'll agree with you. Let me just say, I'll agree with you. Your RFP does say that you have to have a Guam business license at award, and you must have two staffers certified under certain things in Guam. I'll agree with you, right? But I guess what I'm trying to understand is what that process looks like if it's not talked about in the RFP. Does that make sense? Does my question make sense to you, or my confusion make sense to you?
Not really.
So we just went over that you must have a Guam business license to get awarded any contract, regardless of local preference. That's correct, right?
I'm sorry, repeat that again.
Sure. So anybody who does business with the retirement fund must have a Guam business license.
Yes.
Right? And so that's separate and apart from local procurement preference.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe I'll ask it this way. I don't know if this is possible. It's not an exhibit, but can we show 5008 from the procurement law? I can pull it up on my iPad if that's easier, but it's just a... And while we're going there, let me just, because I do have it on. So they just pulled it up behind you, and I can bring my iPad up, or you're welcome to use the screen. May I stand for this portion?
Please.
Thank you. So I just want to make sure, Ms. Voss, we are understanding the statute similarly based on your testimony. And I'm just going to stay close to my mic. Sometimes I forget. But again, so this is 5008. All procurement of supplies and services shall be made from among businesses licensed to do business on Guam and that maintain an office on Guam. That's what you're referring to by saying that's what the local preference requires.
Yes.
Understood. Okay. I think I understand your testimony a little better now. Now let's just eliminate some of the surplusage. Letter A talks about a licensed bona fide manufacturing business. The retirement fund is not seeking any manufacturing for this procurement, obviously. Letter B talks about a business that carries inventory. We're not talking about inventory here. Correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and letter C, bona fide retail or wholesale business.
No.
Not talking about that. So we are talking about letter D. And so I want to make sure I understand your testimony, because D seems to have more requirements than just a local license and a local staffed office, right? And I'll give you a second to review D.
Okay.
So again, the first one's pretty general clause. A service business actually in business. Let's assume that's satisfied by your requirement that you have a local Guam license and a local staff office. What about the second clause? Doing a substantial portion of its business on Guam. How would the retirement fund use that requirement in the process you talked about, right? Because you talked about a business license and a locally staffed office.
You mean how would we verify?
So your testimony was you would apply the local preference at some time after evaluation. We've just established that A through C don't apply, so it must be D. Does the RFP say anything about how the retirement fund goes about verifying whether a business does a substantial portion of its business on Guam?
No.
Okay. How about hiring at least 95% of U.S. citizens, lawfully admitted permanent residents, or nationals of the United States, or persons who are lawfully admitted to the United States based on their citizenship? Is there anything that the retirement fund does when it applies this local preference to all procurements, as you say it does, that verifies this requirement?
95% of U.S. citizens?
Or other, I'll just summarize the remainder as other persons authorized to work in the United States.
We would just ask the vendor who actually is awarded to verify that.
But let's be clear, it doesn't say that in the RFP.
No, it doesn't.
And it also doesn't say you must do a substantial portion of your business on Guam.
No, it doesn't.
So when you testify that the retirement fund in all of its procurements applies the local preference to every procurement, you're only talking about, if we could just go up, Derek, the sort of mainstay line at the beginning of the statute. License to do business on Guam and then maintain an office or other facility on Guam.
That's correct.
You don't look to the remainder of...
How would you define substantial business?
Oh, that's what I mean. And I'm going to get to that. I appreciate that. The fact that it's vague, still, I'm just saying you don't apply. You don't have an analysis anywhere baked into your RFP mm-hmm. or the processes you described today.
No.
Okay. Now, again, let's be clear. I agree. Substantial business may have, some issues, but we're acknowledging that language is there. I mean, I think you just did that, right?
Yeah.
So you heard counsel, you heard our opening statement where I talked about the retirement fund seems to suggest, and I think your testimony confirmed this, you would apply the local preference after evaluation. You are not. And the retirement fund's position today is you will not look at whether a firm does substantial business on Guam.
I don't know how to define that.
And you will not look at whether a firm has 95% of its employees.
We can verify that.
But was it your intent to do so with this RFP?
Our intent was to comply with 5008. So that particular provision, we would have to actually ask how to interpret that.
Okay, and that's a question you would direct to counsel, yes. Not to me, right? Yeah, I would appreciate that. So I want to now step back. You heard Mr. Camacho preface some of the OPA authority and precedent on this matter. He mentioned two cases, Radiocom and Emission Technologies.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with those authorities?
I'm familiar with a little bit about what it was about.
Well, let me ask, did the retirement fund, prior to issuing the solicitation package in March, go out and look for any business that could qualify locally to do the work you're soliciting that did a substantial portion of its business in Guam?
Our RFP was open and competitive because we opened it to all qualified bidders, including Guam-based.
No, I understand that. I guess I want to be clear, though. So my question is, and I'll just represent to you because they're authorities. Emission Technologies says that the agency has an obligation to go and look whether these services are offered in Guam prior to soliciting them. Did the retirement fund do that? Look for any business that could provide the services solicited that did a substantial portion of its business on Guam?
Because it's a professional services procurement, and it's actually based on qualifications, we didn't do just a single search for Guam. We actually announced it for, casted the net out there for all, anybody who was interested in participating.
Yeah, I understand the, you're talking about publication of your solicitation, right? I saw you put it in the newspaper and you put it on a periodical for fund management or wealth management.
Pensions and investments.
Pensions and investments. But I'm talking about pre-March 17th. So before you issued the solicitation, what I'm representing is that Emission Technology says at some point before the solicitation, the agency must do some research. I'm asking if you did that.
No.
Okay, did you research whether on Guam there were any businesses that employed at least 95% United States citizens or other persons authorized to do work in Guam with a firm that could qualify to do the services being solicited?
No.
Now I want to ask you about, and again, and this just goes to the Retirement Funds Council wanted to talk a little bit about timeliness. You understand they're making arguments on timeliness today and jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd like to complete that record if I could. When AFC filed its protest on April 10th, do you recall that there were two issues that AFC protested?
April 10th.
Yeah, I can ask you to look at Exhibit yes. 2 because that would be your response to the protest.
I remember one of them. Okay.
And so I'm just going to ask, so if there was another basis of protest, would it have been responded to by your letter?
Yeah, you AFC's concern was the transition, one of the items. Transition planning requirement.
And those were items that were included in the original RFP?
That's correct.
March 17th?
Yes.
And the Retirement Fund actually took action. They said, you know what, we agree with this basis of protest. It has merit. Good. Is that fair?
Yes.
And so we're going to remove this portion. The Retirement Fund didn't say that our April 10th or that ASC's April 10th protest was untimely, though, with regard to the other issue.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, and in fact, that was actually an affirmative, that was affirmative language in the RFP that we protested to on April 10th, correct?
Yes.
And I guess though, I just want to make sure it's clear. The questions that were submitted on March 31st, ASC asked about both, didn't they? Transition planning and geographic preference?
Yes.
So, I mean, it would appear they were the same exact factual sequence. Yeah. And RFPs issued, ASC asks two questions, ASC gets a response to both questions and files two substantive bases of protest.
Okay.
But the Retirement Fund only found one of those bases untimely.
Yes.
And again, we'll just go back to GGRF's counsel's opening statement. GGRF said that, you know, ASC's papers seem to acknowledge that the Retirement Fund, you are not required to put every single provision into that applies to your RFP. You don't have to state it verbatim in your RFP, right?
That's correct.
I mean, I someone who's been in government as long as you, I'm aware of your reputation. You follow the law.
That's right.
I mean, you're not trying to get out of following the law by not including citations in your RFP. I didn't think that. Did it?
No.
But how would a bidder know if 5008D applies as of the date the March 17th RFP was issued?
In referencing 5008 again, We did include that they had to have a foreign business license, notwithstanding your comments earlier, and also maintain an office on Guam, staffed office.
Yeah. And how about D? The retirement fund did not include that business.
We didn't include that by name or by number. We did not put that particular provision over there.
And has the retirement fund ever publicly stated prior to responding to ASC's question that it wouldn't apply 5008D to professional services request for proposal at the retirement fund?
We did not explicitly state that.
And in your 20 plus years, have you ever stated that or taken that position as the administrator of our retirement fund, the director?
We've never put it in our RFPs.
So ASC couldn't have known that that was your position until you told them that. Isn't that fair?
If you're referring to just Section D of 5008, with regards to all the other provisions there outside of Guam business license and a staffed office, no, I don't expect them to know.
In fact, because today your testimony, I think, is pretty clear. You don't know how to conduct an analysis of what does a substantial portion of business in Guam means.
It's up for definition because I would have to actually ask counsel to guide us on that. How would we apply that?
Because you weren't expecting to have to apply it to this RFP.
Not to any of our RFPs.
So ASC couldn't have known that you weren't going to apply it until you said that. Isn't that correct?
That's right.
Thank you, Ms. Voss. I have no further questions this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Good morning, Ms. Voss. May I call you Paula? Thank you. I want to clarify something with regard to what ASC's counsel testified on your behalf, but I want you to clarify it for the record that I was appointed the SAG for what RFP?
Oh, I'm sorry. It was for the 2023 RFP. The 2025, it was through the OAG.
And you mentioned earlier that it was Fred Nishihara. And another attorney general?
Marina Virginia.
Virginia. Okay. And what was your conversations with the attorney general with regard to this RFP? Okay. Can you just walk us through the process?
Yeah, sorry. I just want to know if they're going to waive. I'm going to ask. I purposely didn't get into any of the discussion.
I'm asking for the process so that it's on the record as to what the RFP was approved.
Okay, so initially...
Sorry, let me ask you this. Sorry. Thank you, Bucky, for that. Did the AG review the RFP?
Yes, they did.
Did the AG mention anything in the RFP with regard to Section 5008?
Not that I recall.
Did the AG ever bring up that the RFP was deficient with as it applies to Guam procurement law?
There were a couple of drafts that went back and forth with the AG, other sections or provisions that have to be included, which we did.
Anything related to 5008?
No.
Did the Attorney General's office sign off on the final RFP before you issued it?
Yes.
Mr. Brennan brought up the fact that ASC has participated in the procurement for these exact same services over the last 10, 15 years. Does it go back further than that?
Maybe 20.
20 years? And has the RFP in the last 20 years ever included Section 508 specifically that ASC is asking today?
No.
Has ASC ever protested or appealed any of those RFPs as it relates to Section 508 over the last 20 years?
No.
Again, this is, I asked the public auditor's indulgence with regard to the timeliness arguments. I just want to have this on the record.
Please, I did too. I mean, I purposely, because I want the record to be clear when it goes to them on high, that these questions were asked. I mean,
thank you for that. When did GGRF issue the RFP?
March 17th.
And that was the original proposal date?
Yes.
And when was the due date?
In April 20th. Or April 24th.
When did ASC file its protest? You need something to refund? What month?
April.
Okay. And Mr. Brennan just presented you with your letter in response to that protest. And what was that letter dated?
April 23rd.
And what was the fund's position with regard to Section 508 protest?
That under the local procurement preference, we will not use a point scoring for that particular evaluation stage, but we will go ahead and apply it during the award stage.
Okay, and there was another issue that Mr. Brennan asked you about earlier. What was that issue?
With regards to the
to their protest.
The transition protest planning requirement.
Right. And what did that involve?
That pretty much allowed us to kind of look at the responses of a prospective offer in the continuity of the services that were going to be provided, and the timelines of how long it would take to transition if a new firm was to come on during that period. So they were just questions related to just in the event there was a new prospective bidder that we would kind of have that information on hand.
And what did the retirement fund decide on that protest issue?
Because of their concern that they brought up with regards to providing some sort of an advantage to the current provider, GPA, we took it out. We went ahead and agreed to take it out and allowed for... amended the RFP and allowed for anybody else that was willing to submit. We extended the deadline to allow them to go ahead and submit proposals.
Even if you left it in, would it prejudice ASC? And why not?
Because all the offers would have had to answer it. Anybody submitting proposals would have had to answer it.
But was it part of an evaluation factor that would prejudice any newcomer versus the incumbent?
No.
So would there, is there any consequence with regard to ranking if you left it in or took it out?
No.
With regard to qualifications? So was that why you decided to just appease them and take it out?
Yes.
But with regard to section 5008, what, you denied that, correct?
That's right.
And you denied that because?
Because this is a professional services solicitation that is really qualifications based. So there is no point scoring that we were going to allow during the evaluation process. But we went ahead and said that we will apply it during the award.
Okay. I want to call your attention to GGRF's exhibit D, or sorry, D as in echo. Earlier, you referenced a, I believe, minimum requirements to mm-hmm. qualify under the RFP. Is that correct?
Yes.
Now, would that be on
section
GRF 165 as the base stamp number at the bottom?
Yes.
Subsection B. And I don't know, Jared.
I'm looking for it.
Paula has it. The public auditor has it, but Mr. Brennan.
Oh, I have it.
You have it. Okay.
165, right?
Yes. Okay. Can you tell me here in the, where in the minimum qualifications that the fund would interpret that it was complying with section 5008?
Under B, statement regarding minimum qualifications, number 4.
Okay, can you read that for the record?
Upon award of the contract, but before the commencement of services, if later, the successful firm must be duly licensed to conduct business in the territory of Guam. And number 10.
Okay. Can you read that to the record?
The firm must have at least 3 individuals located on island to assist in participant enrollment and engagement. At least 2 individuals must be appropriately credentialed and licensed to provide investment and distribution advice to BGRM participants.
So you had a bidder who did not agree to having 3 individuals located in law to assist the participants and appropriately credentialed and licensed. Would they have met the minimum qualifications?
No.
Let's go now to the evaluation factors, which is listed in GGRF 189. Sorry, Jared, 189. Are you there? Can you, Paula, can you tell us what this section is? Section 6?
Section 6 is the evaluation and selection procedures.
Okay, so this is the evaluation criteria that the panel would review each RFP against?
Yes.
And this is only after determining that the bidders would meet the minimum qualifications prior to award, correct?
That's me.
Can we go to the next page, 190? Subsection C. What are items 1 through 9?
They're the evaluation factors used in evaluating the proposals.
And whether you are a local company, as anyone wants to define it as, or whether you are a current off-island company who is willing to come in and comply with the local licensing requirements and the local preference, this is pretty much an open RFP to anyone here, right?
That's right.
Has ASC ever been denied submitting a packet to the retirement fund?
No.
Since the appeal was filed, have any proposals been opened?
No.
Have any proposals been evaluated?
No.
Have any contracts been awarded?
No.
What procurement statutes and regulations cover in this RFP?
5416 and 3114, which deals with competitive bidding.
And why did you choose this method of source selection?
That way we can actually get the best type of firm to provide the services. So we open it to everyone that is willing to submit, whether they're Guam based or licensed and national.
And has the retirement fund denied any local company as defined by ASC from participating in any of its procurement or awards?
No.
Did the RFP require proof of a Guam business license at the proposal submission?
No.
What did the RFP require?
The minimum requirements, the cover letter, which included all their information, number of proposals.
You can go back to the minimum qualification section if you need to reinforce. But is it, in the interest of time, is it to obtain a business license once the award or and prior to commencement?
Yes, that
would
is
we it. Agree to doing that. And what about to establish a staff office on Guam before the awarding contract execution?
That is something that is addressed in the minimum requirements, and we talk about it throughout the questions.
Why was the licensing requirement placed at the time of award prior to before the award?
Because if you weren't awarded the bid, it would actually exclude some offers that are not Guam based or Guam licensed yet from actually submitting a bid. So we require that only upon the selection of the most qualified bidder.
Is that because the type of services the fund is soliciting sort of unique?
There aren't very many that offer these types of services. So the pool is limited in the number of TPAs that are actually out there that can provide the services.
So the fund's intent is not to disenfranchise any bidder or offerer, is that correct?
That's correct.
But rather to open up the net to see who can be the best qualified for the government to qualify.
That's correct.
Your minimum qualifications refers to that they have to have credentialed individuals. What are those credentials?
To provide education and to some level of investment advice.
But is there a license that are required by these individuals?
Yes, I believe there's a series 65. I don't remember it off the top of my head in terms of all the licenses required.
But these are licensed governed by FINRA?
Yes.
How did GGRF handle the questions from prospective offerers?
During the RFP phase,
yes.
All the questions were required to be submitted in writing. GGRF prepared the responses to those questions, and then we issued our Q&A to everybody at the same time.
Was there a deadline that everyone needed to submit their questions?
Yes, March 31st.
Were there any private or off-the-record communications with any vendor?
No.
GGRF amend the RFP in response to concerns raised by SC, I believe the answer.
Yes.
Right, and that was with regard to the transition planning requirement, right?
Yes.
What steps did GGRF take after ASC appealed?
We immediately issued a third amendment and put a stay on the procurement activity and stopped all procurement activity and lifted any deadlines for submission of proposals.
And that's in Amendment 3. Has any vendor suffered a competitive disadvantage as a result of GGRF's actions?
I don't think so.
In your view, is a central question for the public auditor with regard to how Section 5008 applies to the undisputed facts?
Yes.
And the timings as it relates to the undisputed facts. Mr. Brennan asked you earlier about two of the OPA's prior decisions. One is Radiocom and one is Emission Technologies. And you mentioned that you were somewhat familiar with Radiocom. Let's start with Radiocom. How does Radiocom's facts, as you know it, that you can recall, compare to what GGRF did in this case?
Radiocom issued a sole source award to a vendor without any competition for that particular award. In our case, we actually issued an RFP that was open and competitive for everyone that was interested in submitting a proposal.
To include
a license.
And you mentioned earlier that you are familiar with emissions technology, right?
Somewhat.
And that was an RFP. The Taiwan Power Authority?
Yes.
How does this compare to what GGRF did in this case?
Well, GPA actually included a local preference requirement in their proposals, but ended up, I believe, awarding it to somebody who was not non-licensed. And even at the time of submission, didn't even meet the requirements of the proposal the minimum requirements of their RFP. In our case, we don't have, although we require a long license, and you know, for whoever the successful offer is, that is done at the award stage. It wasn't included in our evaluation criteria.
So as you testified earlier, GGRF's RFP process in this case would still have been able to apply 5008 at the award stage.
Yes.
And again, for the record, at any time did you intend to avoid compliance with local preference requirements?
No.
Was your intent to comply with all requirements of the Guam Procurement Law?
Yes.
I have no further questions.
I have a couple of questions, and then I'll let you do rebuttal. Were you familiar with 5008D and its list of things that are required?
I was familiar with it with regards to pretty much the procurement we do at GGRF for bids, you know, for professional services. 5008 was something that we did consider, you know, using in evaluation stages because of the qualifications-based requirement. It was something I included at the end prior to awarding.
Did your RFP mention 5008 anywhere?
Not by number.
Are you aware that some agencies, including the Office of Public Accountability, has a paragraph in its RFP that makes mention of that it would at some time somehow comply with 5008?
No.
Do you know if the retirement fund includes in its RFP a provision similar to the provision included in the RFP by the OPA of, I think it's W. Acknowledging the existence of 5008 and its application, that it would be applied somehow.
No, I'm not aware that the OPA includes it in their RFPs.
In the retirement fund, in the list of evaluation criteria, none of them ask, do you have 95% of your workforce U.S. citizens, permanent residents, duly qualified to be in the United States?
No, it doesn't explicitly state that in the evaluation.
In your evaluation criteria, is there anything that says does your business have substantially practice on Guam?
No.
when you were answering Mr. Camacho's question of 5008, you were making reference mostly to A and B on license, but not D as it relates to those provisions as it relates to substantial business, 95%, and all the other things that are required in D.
No, only made reference to the Guam business license requirement and the office staffed by on Guam.
And the minimum qualifications that you have in your RFP is that 3 be on Guam.
Yes.
But if they have an office of, if the business that qualified had 5 employees, 2 of them residing in New Jersey, would that qualify as, in your opinion, as a Guam-based, if they were licensed here with 3, but 2 lived in New Jersey?
No, we would require that all 3 be here.
But no, I mean, 3 actually lived here and worked here, but only 2 of them lived in New Jersey or Maine.
So basically 5
yeah.
employees? Yeah, that would qualify.
If the 3 were part of a workforce of 300 that were of that from that company, would the 3 locally based and 197 spread throughout the United States, 3 in each state, would that comply with your minimum requirement of 3?
And based on my understanding of 5008, notwithstanding D, that's how we apply it. I mean, how do you interpret?
No, I understand.
Yeah.
I'm asking these questions more for my edification than yours, because I'm trying to understand it too. Because this is a unique question, and with Mr. Camacho's questions, have you ever had a protest as it relates to D before?
No.
So Mr. Brennan's question of whether or not you would apply it at some point was a good question to determine whether or not you would apply D.
Yes.
And so until April 6th, he applied D when he asked, when on March 31st, when he asked about the question, would you have, none of us knew what D were as of March 31st and whether or not you were going to apply it.
The RFP does address the 2 issues with regards to the Guam business license and the staffed office. Does not make a reference to Section D. Excuse me, but so no, I don't know whether or not they would, I mean, any offer would actually be aware of that particular section.
And so when he asked on the 31st, it was a good inquiry. It was a valid inquiry as to whether or not you would apply. I'm not trying to trick you. I'm just trying to ask if it would be a valid question.
I guess for that particular section, Section D, that could be a valid question.
And so until you answered on the 10th, saying no, there was no way that he or anyone would know that you were not considering it as part of the evaluation.
Well, just the fact that it wasn't listed there, you know that it wasn't part of the evaluation.
Okay. And all right. Can we take just a short nature break and then I'll allow it to be there.
Thank you.
We're off the record at 10:33 a.m. We're back on the record at 10:36 a.m.
Mr. Brennan, your witness.
Thank you, Mr. Public Auditor, and thank you, Ms. Lotz, for bearing with us. I don't have much. I just have some follow-ups on the Public Auditor, Mr. Camacho's questions. Some low-hanging fruit. Your response to the Public Auditor's last question, and I'll just remind you, he asked you, you know, if ASC's question on the 10th, on the 31st was a good question, was it an appropriate question? Your response was the fact that it wasn't listed, you know, it's not part of the evaluation. Again, you know, we've covered some of this ground. You acknowledge you're not required to put every statutory citation in the RFP.
That's correct.
For example, you know, there's obligations under 5249 of the procurement code that you have to maintain a complete procurement record, right?
That's right.
And if you don't maintain a complete procurement record, you could be hit with a protest, correct?
Correct. Sure.
But nothing in your RFP talks about the procurement record as an example, right?
That's correct.
But we talked earlier, we know you're scrupulous, your long history in government of Guam. We assume, and by we, I'll just say the general public, it's safe to assume the retirement fund, notwithstanding the lack of a statutory citation, will follow the law.
That's correct.
In fact, as I understand your testimony today, the retirement fund's response to ASC's question is we apply the local preference just in the way we understand it.
Yes.
So that's the response, right? That's what you understand why I went through the exercise of initially we said it's inconsistent with 5216, and then we later said we apply it but in our own way. You see why that exercise is necessary, because mm-hmm. even today, I have to admit, I'm not very clear on what retirement funds answer to that March 31st question. Excuse me. Answer to ASC's March 31st question was. Do you at least understand why I'm confused after having heard the testimony laid out this way?
Somewhat.
I appreciate that. Now, the public auditor also asked you and went through a little exercise about, you know, if we had three employees here, but 300 or 197 elsewhere throughout the United States, right? You're at the retirement fund. What's the percentage of 3 plus 97 is 100. What is 3 out of 100? What's the percent?
3 out of 100. 3%.
So not 95%, correct?
Now, interpreting that particular provision, it isn't 95% of your staff have to be U.S. as opposed to whoever that offer is, 95% of the employees have to be here.
Well, may I ask a 5008D to be brought back up, Derek, if you still have it?
Okay.
And while he's pulling it up, I'll read it, right? So just in response. A service business actually in business, doing a substantial portion of its business on Guam, and hiring at least 95% U.S. citizens, lawful admitted permanent residents or nationals of the United States, or persons who are lawfully admitted to work in the United States based on their citizenship in any of the nations previously comprising the trust territory of the Pacific Islands, right? So again, my question is, follow up to the public auditor, 3 out of 100 is 3%, right? And we're assuming there are 97 employees elsewhere outside of Guam. They would not meet that requirement, right?
Based on what you're saying.
And then, you know, the public auditor also asked you about substantial portion of business. I mean, in your industry, fund management, wealth management, are you familiar with the terms assets under management or funds under management? Is that a metric the retirement fund could use as an industry standard to determine whether a TPA is performing substantially all of its work or a substantial portion of its business in Guam?
I don't know if it's in this particular RFP, but no.
You couldn't use funds under management for evaluation, right? Is that what you're getting at? Like, that's not taken into consideration.
For our fund managers, yes, we do take that into consideration in terms of the size.
Because that's the relevant business that the retirement fund is concerned with. Mm-hmm. How much funds do they have under management? That could demonstrate the quality of their work, as an example.
So that ends up being, for us, a minimum requirement.
Yeah, exactly. A minimum requirement because I'll just ask you, I mean, that tells you a lot about an entity you're dealing with. If they have $1 under management versus $1 billion, isn't that fair?
That's fair.
And so my question again is that an appropriate metric the retirement fund could use to determine whether an entity is doing substantially all of its business on Guam if it has a large amount of funds under management in Guam?
We don't necessarily, we didn't include it as an evaluation factor, but yes, it is a necessary requirement. We get that information from the questions that come in. So when we're doing a comparison of the firms, then that is something that is actually pulled out, their assets under management.
And so when the retirement funds council was questioning you, you said, you know, ASC's understanding of the local preference. Do you recall that? The line of questioning, what is ASC's understanding of the local preference versus yours? Do you recall that?
No.
Okay, well, I'll just represent to you. I believe his question was the way ASC defines the local preference. Do you recall that line of question?
Okay.
And then he compared that to your sort of minimum qualification and evaluation criteria understanding of the local preference. That's what I have in my notes. Does that kind of give you enough?
Okay.
So let's just get rid of the elephant in the room, right? In the 2023 RFP, as I understand the process, three offers that met the minimum qualifications were ranked and then invited to give presentations, right?
Okay.
Is that correct?
Yes.
And isn't it true in 2023, ASC was one of the offers invited to give a presentation?
Yes.
Which means they met the minimum qualifications in 2023 for this virtually unchanged RFP going back for decades, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's not really a question of whether ASC is qualified, right? But as I understood those questions, it kind of seemed like we were suggesting, I think the words ASC wants to be handed this on a silver platter. Do you recall that statement being made?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a yes?
Yes.
And so there's no dispute. I mean, if we're talking about undisputed facts, ASC was qualified in 2023, they're likely qualified today.
I haven't evaluated proposals.
I understand, yeah. I'll just say they were qualified in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no dispute as to their past qualification.
Okay.
Are you aware of whether Empower Retirement employs 95% U.S. citizens or other persons defined under the statute?
Yes.
Are you aware of whether they do a substantial portion of their business in Guam?
Define substantial.
If we were using funds under management?
funds under management
or assets under management. I assume they manage other pension funds.
Yes.
Elsewhere.
So in totality, in the aggregate, yes.
A substantial portion of their business is in Guam.
That's when it's substantial.
Well, you said that you become aware of their portfolio based on the questions, right? And so you have experience with Empower.
Yes.
Have you reviewed their work?
Yes.
Are you familiar with their presence in the industry?
Yes.
They do business elsewhere?
I don't know if it's outside of Guam, other than mainland.
What do they do in the mainland, if you're aware?
They also offer TPA services throughout the mainland.
Are you aware of their next largest client?
No.
Are you aware if they have any clients bigger than the Government of Guam Retirement Fund?
No.
Let's talk about when your counsel was discussing with you the process, right? So you're saying, and we covered this ground, but I just want to lay the groundwork for my questions following up. So local business license and locally staffed office are the only qualifications, really, for local preference purposes.
Yes.
And you will apply those requirements after evaluation.
Yes.
But you are requiring a license and three individuals at the time of award.
Minimum.
And those are sufficient to meet local preference.
Or at least put whoever the prospective bidder is on notice that that's what's required.
So what would be the import of a local procurement policy preference if anybody who bids could meet this requirement by award?
I'm sorry, what was that?
So you're saying that the minimum qualifications you require is by the time of award, you need a business license?
I believe it's 3 hours.
Here, can we go to 165 of the, I think it's retirement funds exhibit. I have to write this one. Exhibit E, ECHO.
It says upon award of the contract.
That's what I mean. So we're assuming this is after evaluation. Upon award of contract, they must have a business license. They must have a locally staffed office with 3 employees.
Minimum
3 employees, 2 of which hold the required certification. Right? By the time of award. What would be the effect of a local procurement policy preference if that's all that's required?
Well, 5008 references those 2 particular criteria.
But it also references doing a substantial portion of business on Guam, correct? D?
That's correct.
And 95% persons authorized to work as listed in that statute, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you, I think in response to the public auditor's question, you said, yeah, but we interpret it notwithstanding D, right? Those were your words, notwithstanding subsection D, correct?
Correct.
So and we talked about this, everybody who does business with the government of Guam, not just the retirement fund, must have a Guam business license, right?
Right.
And the retirement fund minimum qualification is you need a minimum 3 employees. Is that a difficult requirement to meet?
I don't think so.
Do those 3 employees need to be in existence prior to the solicitation?
No.
So anybody, anywhere in the world, could meet those requirements by the time of award.
That's correct.
So I ask you again, what is the effect of a local procurement preference, the way you're interpreting it, notwithstanding subparagraph D?
That at the time of the award, that they would actually be able, prior to services commencing, that they would have a Guam business license and establish an office here on Guam.
But we've just established that anyone could meet that requirement by award.
We weren't excluding or disqualifying anybody that wanted to participate in the solicitation.
But you're also not giving preference to local businesses over others.
Well, during the evaluation process, even though it doesn't explicitly state that, it could be a local licensed company that could actually rank first.
But not given any preference.
No.
Just on the, I guess on the final issue, this distinction between the AG's office and your office. So your testimony was the AG's office signed off on the final form of this procurement.
Yes.
They signed off on the transition requirements that you removed in response to ASC's protest.
They were aware that the amendment was being issued.
Yeah, and I don't want to ask about what they said, but I'm just saying that was after they signed off on it, right?
Yes.
And again, ASC's position, I'll just make it very clear, an incumbent bidding on the contract would have to answer those questions concerning transition, right?
All of them would have to check.
Exactly. Everyone would have to answer those questions, right? And those 280 or so questions that were initially in the RFP formed the plan to provide the services solicited in the RFP, correct?
Correct.
And in your own evaluation criteria on page 190, do you recall what was the weight of the plan, the score attributed to the plan to provide the services? And we're looking at GDRF 190, Exhibit E, right? So 10% of the score had to do with your response to these 280 questions, which included transition planning, correct?
Right.
But an incumbent wouldn't have to do any transition planning, correct?
No.
And so they were given an advantage somewhere in this 10% in the way the RFP was initially drafted before ASC's protest.
I don't see how that would be an advantage since it doesn't really alter the evaluation criteria.
But the criteria exists.
Yeah, that's why we went ahead and agreed with ASC to take it out.
Why did you agree?
Because whether it was there or it wasn't there, it's not something I can obtain later if I had to.
But it's also the incumbent wouldn't have had to, they don't have to answer questions about how do I transition these services to myself, right?
Okay.
So that it's fair that there was a requirement that the incumbent was not subject to that other bidders would have been.
I see your point.
And the AG signed off on you removing those. Notwithstanding, the AG approved the final form of the RFP.
That's fine.
Thank you. I have no further questions, Ms. Voss. Again, I'm sorry that you had to be the one, the director, on the hot seat for this, but I do appreciate your time today.
I want to go back to Mr. Brennan's assertion that assets under management would be the best evaluation factor. Is that correct for a TPA services provider?
No.
What would be a better evaluation factor?
The type of services that they would be able to provide with regards to the members, our members. They're record keepers. That's basically the services that we were trying to obtain. They would actually provide education to the members, assist them with advisory or education on investment lineups, but no, not assets under management.
I want to refer you to the RFP, which is Exhibit Echo at PGRF 168.
What page?
PGRF 168. Yeah, I want you to look at item number 8. And is that what you're asking the offerers to provide with regard to how you would evaluate, right?
Yes. It's basically the number of participants that they currently have or are servicing.
And it's specific to certain types of plans, correct?
Correct.
And are those plans specific just to the plans offered by the Government of Guam Retirement Funds?
Yes.
And no other types of plans?
That's correct.
Derek, if you can bring up 5008. I think we're all that tired of looking at 5008. But is there anywhere in the first paragraph of 5008 that a determination for local preference must be provided at the time of evaluation?
No.
Is there anywhere in subsection D that it says evaluation or there must be a preference points or point system provided in a procurement for service business prior to the evaluations of any of the offerers?
No.
And in the retirement fund's experience, how much money is the fund have under management now, Paula?
Approximately 2.5 billion.
How much of that is managed by fund managers?
They're all managed by fund managers.
Are any of the fund managers located in Guam?
No.
Do you preclude any fund managers that may be on Guam from bidding in your RFPs for fund managers? So is it safe to say that a substantial portion of all your fund managers are outside of Guam?
Yes.
And would it be safe to say that if you were to apply ASC's interpretation of substantial portion of business in Guam as it pertains to assets under management, would that get the Government of Guam Retirement Fund the best fund managers?
No.
What do you look for with regard to how to choose a fund manager?
With regards to investment fund manager or this TPA?
Let's start with investment fund manager.
With the investment fund manager, of course, they have to meet the eligibility requirements under our statute, which is 8145. They have to maintain assets under management of at least $1 billion. They have to have been in business for at least 10 years. So there's a series of criteria that is looked for prior to, but it's open to everyone.
And this section of the retirement statute that you referred to, 8145, that is the fund's investment policy, correct?
Investment, the requirements for an investment agent or manager.
Do you have a similar investment policy for the DC plan?
Not in statute.
But is there one the board adopted?
Yes.
And is there one the board adopted for the 457?
Yes.
And those criteria are set forth similarly as the fund managers for the DB plan?
For record keepers, yes.
So would it be fair to say that in trying to lock in retirement funds definition of substantial portion of business on WOM is virtually impossible?
Yes.
Especially for the type of services you're trying to procure?
Yes.
I want to ask you this question, and if you can answer the question, going back to the 2023 RFP. That RFP was opened, correct?
Correct.
Evaluated?
Correct.
Correct. And as Mr. Brennan alluded to, ASC came in and ranked, what number do you recall?
Number two.
And ASC was afforded the ability to provide a presentation before the selection committee, correct? Do you recall who ASC's third-party system administrator would be?
Fidelity, I think.
Is Fidelity licensed to do business on Guam?
I don't know.
Do you know if Fidelity has any employees on Guam providing services on Guam?
No, I don't know.
But yet you still deemed ASC qualified in 2023.
Yes.
And you're unable at this point to determine who's qualified because the period to submit proposals have not closed, right?
That's correct.
And until such time, you are unable to discuss whether anyone can meet the requirements of Section 5008, whether it's A, B, C, or D, correct?
That's correct.
I have no further questions about the bottom.
Yeah, I just have one question. Just on that last point. But you can tell us, because you've told us today, whether or not the retirement fund will apply 5008, correct?
Yes.
I think I'm confident, and I understand the answer now, is the retirement fund will apply 5008, notwithstanding paragraph D.
Yes.
I have no further questions.
Just for clarification for me, what do you understand notwithstanding 5008D? Does that mean you will not apply it?
That means I don't know how to apply D.
But you understand that it is in the statute?
Yes.
Have follow up on that? No. Okay. Thank you.
Your
next one, Mr.
Chairman. Mr. Public Auditor, the appellant rests. We're satisfied with the record before.
May I make a closing statement? Thank you. Good afternoon, Public Auditor. It's still morning. So after today's testimony, the fact remained undisputed. The RFP was issued March 17. ASC filed a pre-award protest April 16, which GGRF denied in part and accepted in part, as testified earlier. ASC appealed on April 30th. Before the public auditor, no proposals have been opened and no award has been made. The sole question in this procurement case is how Guam procurement law applies to those uncontested facts. Again, with regard to jurisdiction, Section 54258 requires protest to be filed within 14 days. Protester knew or should have known of the basis of the protest. The RFP, as Ms. Boss testified, made it clear that on March 17, it was qualifications-based professional services procurement under 5216 and 2-bar-3114 with no numerical local preference scoring. That's pretty clear, and I believe ASC conceded to that as well, that there was no numerical local preference scoring. Later, March 31st questions and April 11th answers simply confirm what the solicitation already showed. There's nothing new. 14-day period began March 17. ASC's protest was April 16. The protest was untimely, and the public auditor lacked jurisdiction. With regard to Section 5008, GGRS position is that 5008 would be fully satisfied. ASC claims that 5008 mandates a scoring preference, but 5008 contains no such requirement for professional service procurements. It requires that when qualified local firms are available, award ultimately be made to a Guam licensed business. GGRS requirement, RFP requirement, meets the mandate by requiring the awardee to obtain a Guam business license and establish a staffed Guam office before contract execution. With regard to Radiocom, ASC cites Radiocom, but this case condemns a sole source award where the government failed to solicit competitive bids. GGRF did the opposite. The record reflects that. It was open, competitive, and built in a local licensing requirement. Therefore, Radiocom supports GGRF rather than undermines GGRF's approach. ASC also invokes Mission Technologies. Their GPA's RFP explicitly required a Guam business license at proposal submission, yet the agency considered a best and final offer from an unlicensed vendor. GGRF's case is fundamentally different. GGRF's RFP requires Guam licensing before award, and no proposals has been opened or considered for award. As Ms. Blas testified earlier, there is nothing in 5008 that requires you to be licensed prior to. It just says prior to award. We have therefore fully honored both the RFP's terms and 5008's policy goal of ensuring that the ultimate contractor is a licensed Guam business. Notwithstanding that the law requires someone doing business with a Guam government of Guam agency be licensed to business of Guam in Guam, it only makes sense. That doesn't mean it should be separate and apart from an evaluation factor. ASC's own brief admits no citation requirement. Its hearing brief itself acknowledges that 5008 applies to all procurements, even if the RFP doesn't cite it. Thus, ASC does not claim an explicit statutory citation is required, a key admission showing that the absence of a specific 5008 reference in the RFP is not a legal defect. Director Paula testified that all questions and responses were issued in writing to every offeror simultaneously. GGRF, in good faith, removed the transition requirement as ASC question, and GGRF fully honored the automatic stay once ASC appealed. Because no proposal has been opened or considered, ASC has suffered no prejudice at this point in time. The appeal is entirely a question of law before you today. On the undisputed record with regard to 5425 as to timeliness, and Section 5008 has been fully satisfied as confirmed by Radiocom and Emission Technologies precedent, and ASC concedes that no explicit citation to 5008 was required. For all these reasons, GGRF respectfully asks the public auditor to grant its motion to dismiss, or in the alternative, deny the appeal on the merits. Thank you for your time today, public auditor.
Thank you, Mr. Public Auditor. I'm used to going first when I'm the appellant, so I'll just use this as an opportunity to close and rebut opposing counsel's position. I think I am much more clear. In my opening statement, I thought this hearing would bring clarity, and I'm glad that it did, because I think what's clear now is nobody's, you know, alleging the retirement fund prejudiced ASC as a protestor, right? This is a process protest. What is the process? Tell us what it is so we can all be on an equal playing field. And with regard to 5008, how will you apply it? And I think the testimony today is dispositive in favor of ASC, because I'm going to go to the merits first, so I'll address the timeliness. But on the merits, what the director of the Government of Guam Retirement Fund's position is we will apply 5008, the introductory clause, but we will not apply subparagraph D. Government of Guam Retirement Fund, its board, its agents, whomever is executing a procurement is not allowed to just dispense with provisions of law and law. There is no license because it's vague, or in their view it's vague, or because there's some ambiguity into what substantial business. There is just no authority for the position they are taking, which we've now solidified, which is we will apply the introductory clause, but not sub aereo D. I also find it completely ironic that that is their position, because a stronger argument is probably that it shouldn't apply. However, this half-baked will apply paragraph one, but not subparagraph D makes absolutely no sense. And, you know, try as we might to find robust authority in this jurisdiction interpreting 5008 at the court level, you know, there's just a passing reference in Bank of Guam v. Rady, 2001 case, to the local preference in a footnote. However, this body, the OPA, has precedent on point. That is emission technologies. Whatever they may say about factual distinction with emission technologies, it is an RFP case. And in that RFP case, then public hearing officer Terlahi, now former speaker Terlahi, found that if there is an RFP, the local preference policy is part of that RFP, the agency has an obligation to go and investigate whether there are businesses in Guam that can perform these services. And if there are, they are entitled to preference, whether under A, B, or C, retail, wholesale, manufacturing, or other type of supply service, or under D, services. There is no distinction like there is in the services Sigma veteran-owned preference or professional service, right? We don't have to give services Sigma-owned veteran professional services contracts because the legislature included the language except professional services. Goods and or supplies and services except professional services. They did no such thing in the local procurement policy preference. And on the merits of this question, what the retirement fund is advocating for, let's set aside, you know, that they are not allowed to do this, but let's just assume they were correct. What would be the purpose of a local procurement or local procurement preference if the retirement fund was correct? There would be virtually no preference for local businesses if all you had to do is, by the time of award, get a business license and have a business in, an office in Guam. And at a time when we anticipate historic economic growth, economic activity, which even if it's inside the fence, will have incidental benefits, will require incidental work by our government to catch up to demand, to enforce new laws, there will be additional revenue to our island, right? We expect this buildup to bring huge amounts of revenue to this island. And there are going to be projects that are incidental to that buildup, procurement projects. And according to the retirement fund, an autonomous instrumentality of this government, there is no preference for local procurement, notwithstanding that the law says there is. We just need a business license. Go out and fill out the application and get a business in Guam. Contractors, subcontractors who have no relationship to this island now will be able to come in and participate on professional services procurements, supply procurements, and they will be entitled to no preference if the retirement fund reading is correct. That's not their decision to make. That's the legislature's decision to make. And the legislature has said local businesses who meet the requirements of 5008 A through E are entitled to preference. Their reading would render that statute meaningless at a time when our business, not to get too far outside this case, but at a time when businesses that are staying, that are making investments here, that the legislature has recognized are entitled to preference, need that preference, need a competitive edge against off-island businesses that are able to leverage their scale, leverage their network, leverage their resources from other jurisdictions to beat out businesses here. The prime example in your questioning, Mr. Public Auditor, EY. EY's here now, they're staying. They're still doing audit contracts. What would happen if they're not entitled to local preference? Notwithstanding, they have that big, beautiful finance building in Guam. They employ people here. But if some other big five could just come in and undercut them at the site of potential, you know, margins that are better, but they're able to use their scale to their advantage, the legislature's purpose in creating this local preference would be completely defeated. As I said in the motion hearing on the local preference, it is a laudable goal, and one we can assume that the legislature had in mind, that when they are encouraging our government to do business with something like professionals, in every profession, attorney, accountants, auditors, doctors, dentists, nurses, we suffer in Guam from a dearth of these professionals. We don't have people coming here. We don't have people staying here. Not even our locals want to come here. And so if the legislature decided as a policy matter for the government of Guam that in order to encourage and foster the retention of professionals here, we would extend the local preference to professional services, I can't see how that's unreasonable. I can't see how anything in the presentation negates that that's a laudable goal and that it was likely their goal. And it's not as if anybody's arguing that statute is unclear. Sure, substantial portion of its business in and of itself may be unclear. That doesn't mean the rest of the statute is excused. Compliance is excused, is I guess the best way to put it. On the timeliness, Mr. Public Auditor, I appreciate you made your ruling. I think we have a clear record based on your ruling and then based on the facts we were able to develop. I think the retirement funds waffling is the best evidence that ASC could not have known until they got a definitive answer. To this day, the retirement funds response to the March 31st question is different. Today, they're saying, oh, no, we meet the requirement because minimum three employees on Guam, two with a certification and a business license by the time of award. Therefore, we satisfy 5008. Yet, in March 31st, it was, this is inconsistent with 3114 and 5216. You can't apply local preference to professional services procurement. How could ASC have known? What if they came out on that day and said, on March 31st, oh, we will apply 5008 at the time of award? It could be that ASC didn't protest at that point. If the answer to the question was different, the fact that their answer has evolved over time and has substantively, I said it was a nuanced change, but that doesn't mean it's not a consequential change. The fact that their response to how they would interpret and apply 5008 has changed from March 31st, when the question was asked, to today, September 29th. It's the best demonstration that ASC could not have known before that date that it had a basis to protest. And that's the standard. The standard is when ASC becomes aware of a violation of law or of the RFP. We don't have to show prejudice. Prejudice is not a requirement to show a protest. We just have to show we are aggrieved. And the way the Supreme Court has interpreted an aggrieved party is to say that when you become aware of a violation of law, a violation of the solicitation, or some other violation, for example, of the ethical standards or license requirement. It doesn't say you must be prejudiced by agency action. Completely different standard, not applicable in this proceeding. In closing, Mr. Public Auditor, I think I appreciate that you are sensitive to the importance of this case. I do not think importance necessarily makes it any more complicated than it needs to be. The retirement fund said today they will not follow the law as it's codified. And I don't think that passes muster. We ask you to decide this appeal in ASC's favor, order the retirement fund to reform the RFP to reflect that 5008 will apply and how it will apply. Thank you, Mr. Public Auditor.
I think both of you have been in here on both sides of procurement appeals representing different parties, and know that I will ask both of you to submit findings of fact and conclusions of law that you propose for and a remedy. I would love an answer to this question and trying to figure out how to get across the street to get it there, but please, 30 days into a findings of fact, conclusions of law, and a proposed remedy, recommendation. All right?
So what's the deadline? You want 30 days? That would be October 29th.
October 20th. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're off the record at 11:28.